Hello and welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your guest host, Sansara Taylor, and on today's show, we are going to plunge into themes that we've been focusing on for the last couple of years, the framework, the leadership and struggle for a whole new emancipating way to live. And we'll be sharing some parts of the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show, which broadcasts at youtube.com/therevcoms. And in the first part of the show, I'll bring you a wide-ranging commentary by the host of the RNL show, Andy Z, speaking about winning and winning, by which he means winning an actual revolution, defeating and dismantling this oppressive capitalist imperialist system that rules over people here and all of humanity, but also winning in the sense of bringing into being a new society that is really worth living in, a society that can set humanity free, a new socialist republic on the road to full human emancipation, genuine communism. So winning and winning. And Andy will talk about that. He'll examine the dangers that are intensifying. My God, are they intensifying right now with this horrendous slaughter happening? Israel just bombarding, blockading, carrying out war crimes and crimes against humanity against the 2 million human beings living in Gaza, the Palestinians there. And we could look around the globe at the intensifying crisis facing oppressed humanity. So Andy touches on this, different forms of this, and how this is coming directly from the system of capitalism, imperialism. He goes into the significance of the deep divisions within the U.S. ruling class right now, and the possibility this creates, the heightened possibility, if it's seized and fought for an emancipating revolution. And all of this points to the importance of the roadmap for this revolution, the scientific method as well that's been brought forward by the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. So we're going to talk some about the work the RevComs are doing, the urgent fight to put real revolution, this revolution, on the map this year, and the critical importance of the Bob Avakian interviews that were done on the Revolution Nothing Less show, of digging into them, watching them, learning from this wide-ranging interview with the foremost revolutionary thinker and leader in the world today. And we'll play a section of these interviews where Bob Avakian talks about why is state power a good thing in the hands of the right class. Then, at the back end of the show, I'm going to share two different sharp critiques of major mental chains that weigh millions of people down and keep them tied to this system, even though they hate so much of what this system does. One is a segment put together by Rafael Cadaris and myself that goes up against woke identity politics, a politics that paralyzes and intimidates decent people from speaking, acting, seeking to understand the root of and the solution to the very forms of oppression that need to be strongly opposed with the broadest unity. And the other major segment at the end is an excerpt from the talk that Raymond Lotta gave at Revolution Books in New York City on the lies and distortion about communism, its history, and the new communism that Bob Avakian has developed. His talk is called Communist Revolution We Need versus the Anti-Communist Brainwash You Are Getting. So with that, we're going to dive in. We got a packed show. Let's start with Andy Z, the host of the Revolution Nothing Less show.
Nothing less than a real revolution is what this show is all about. Why we need a revolution, why it's possible, including how to put it on the map, and how to bring forward and prepare a revolutionary people, and what this revolution is for. That is some of what we get into every week on the RNL show. We often speak on the RNL show about winning and winning. Winning a revolution not for revenge, not so the last shall be first, but to emancipate all of humanity. This is an understanding and an orientation, a whole new framework for human emancipation brought forward by the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian, BA, whose leadership we follow on this show. A framework of a building is the design and the foundation and its supporting beams. The framework for the emancipation of humanity are the cornerstone ideas and ways of thinking about how we could get to a new world where people everywhere could be free of all forms of oppression and exploitation, which has been distilled and concretized in the Constitution for the new Socialist Republic in North America, authored by Bob Avakian. And at the core of BAA's framework for revolution, for a radically new society on the road to real emancipation, is a scientific approach to understanding and changing the world. It is the method and approach to understanding why the world is the way it is, and then having the principles, the methods, the structure, the organization, and a plan to radically change the world we have inherited, a world dominated by the system of capitalism and imperialism that is heading towards the destruction of life on Earth. One example of the irrational and suicidal horror of this system was revealed just this past week in a report published in the New York Times. And you should know as background that the aquifers, the underground lakes, which contain most of the water needed for life, have been drastically and dangerously drying up in the U.S. over the past decades. Yet, this report revealed that over the past 15 years, the U.S. empire has become number one in producing oil and gas by fracking. That is a process through which the oil companies take the precious water from the aquifers that people need to live by the trillions of gallons, and then they pump it back into the earth to shake loose the oil and gas, which can then even cause earthquakes. The oil is then burned in engines, heating up the atmosphere and further depleting the water supplies which people, other animals, plant life, and the land itself need to survive. This is a form of collective suicide that is the product of the criminal system we live under. And it is an involuntary suicide for the vast majority of people. So again, winning and winning means being able to win a revolution to overthrow this system, and then winning in the largest sense so that what comes after the revolution is leading to the emancipation of humanity here and all over the world. If you've been watching the RNL Show weekly, you know that we are fighting for the understanding brought forward by Bob Avakian that we are living in a rare moment, a rare time when revolution has become more possible. And we are urgently on the march to put that revolution on the map this year. People everywhere in this country need to not just see and even despair at the monstrous fascist Republican Party of Trump, with their extreme white supremacy, their patriarchy, xenophobia, their MAGA American First madness, with their determination to rule by undisguised thuggery on the one hand. And they must not, on the other hand, on seeing this, throw themselves into the monstrous arms of the Democratic Party under the cover of the Democratic Party's honeyed words and promises, when this party stands for and enforces that same system with its murderous brutality and repression against Black, Brown, and Native people, its suppression of the rights of women and LGBTQ people, its continuation of the fossil fuel madness of imperialism with its security policies that have actually brought the world closer to the danger of nuclear war than at any time in the past 50 years. This is not a choice that anyone with their eyes and conscience open should accept, adjust, or accommodate to. At the RNL Show, we bring to you a whole other way, the roadmap to actually prepare for and make a real revolution. And we bring to you, as I said earlier in this commentary, the vision and the concrete plan for a radically new society that is in the Constitution for the new Socialist Republic in North America, written by Bob Avakian. Obviously, all that I'm speaking about are really big ideas and plans and a bit outside the box for you. It's a lot to absorb. There are two documents that I want to highlight for you. The first goes into how we are working now for a real revolution and a whole new emancipating way to live. And it's available on our website, revcom.us, and as a broadsheet, it's titled, We Are the Revcoms, Revolutionary Communists. And the second, also available on revcom.us and as a broadsheet, is a major declaration titled, We Need and We Demand a Whole New Way to Live, a Fundamentally Different System. This declaration concentrates how the Constitution for the new Socialist Republic in North America envisions and spells out how we could bring it to being a society and ultimately a world free from all forms of slavery, exploitation, and oppression based on class, race, sex, and gender, all relations in which one part of humanity is subordinated to and dominated by others. This demand to abolish and dismantle the existing capitalist imperialist system and replace it with the new socialist system can become the demand of millions in the situation that is rapidly unfolding as the sharp divide at the top of society approaches a pivotal moment with the 2024 election. How this demand could really become the demand that millions of people are determined to fight for is something that we will continue to get into every week on this program. The political divide at the top of U.S. society sharpens by the week. This past week, Trump strongly implied that the top commander of the U.S. military, Mark Milley, should have been executed for how he tried to stave off one of Trump's provocations against China. Unheard of.
Here's what Donald Trump said about Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley, denouncing Milley for the U.S. troop withdrawal against Afghanistan, while also taking on Milley's record and suggesting that General would have been put to death.
And then he posed at a gun shop for a picture to buy a gold Trump Glock. Both actions stoking the fascist base for violence and even civil war. And last week saw Biden working to shore up dangerous U.S. war blocks around the world against Russia and China. God damn, this is but one reason why Bob Avakian has said,
"We can no longer afford to allow these imperialists to dominate the world and to determine the destiny of humanity. They need to be overthrown as quickly as possible."
Look, what is crucial to understand is this from a soon-to-be-published strategic statement on RevCom.us, quote, "When conflicts among the different sections of the bourgeois capitalist ruling class become so deep and hostile that they are no longer able to rule in the normal way they have for generations, that is a sign of extremely deep and acute cracks and fissures in the entire established order. And such a situation must be seized by the oppressed, not to side with one section of the bourgeoisie against another, but instead to rise in revolutionary struggle to overthrow the rule of the bourgeoisie altogether," end quote. For that to happen, we have to be organizing and recruiting now for the revolution to do just that. So before moving on to the rest of our program, I want to share this TikTok from the Revolution Club in Chicago.
"We are the Revolution Club Chicago, and we're the ones that burned the American flag at Jason Aldean's concert in Tinley Park.
5, 6, 7, 8, America.
We're the ones that tried it in a small town where Jason Aldean filmed his music video in Columbia, Tennessee.
The Illinois State Rifle Association just awarded Jason Aldean a lifetime membership. They said that Jason Aldean's song, Try That in a Small Town, represents what they've been fighting for the last 120 years.
Jason Aldean's video brings back what the small town's done in the past with Emmett Till and
that fascist wannabe thug, Jason Aldean, and the Illinois National Rifle Association fit perfectly together.
Jason Aldean video is a pro-lynching fascist recruitment tool.
And this gun rights organization evidently wants to recruit people who like this message.
But we're recruiting too.
We're recruiting people who want to stand up to this fascist violence as part of making revolution.
No more lynch mobs standing out of uniform. No more standing by while good old boys prepare for civil war.
We need and we demand a whole new way to live.
We need to and we are getting organized for a real revolution.
Get with the RevComs.
Last week on the RNL show, we had some fun telling you about posters that the RevComs and supporters are putting up around the country to provoke people to check out the Bob Avakian interviews on the RNL show. Earlier this week, the RevComs were out on a campus and a student ran up to them and interrupted one of them in the middle of their conversation and asked, quote, "Do you know who the most important political thinker and revolutionary leader in the world today is?" The student nailed the wording precisely. The RevCon told them, "Of course I do, it's Bob Avakian." The student said, "I thought you would know. I've been seeing these posters all over my neighborhood and wanting to know the answer." Then they stopped to watch a clip of Bob Avakian from the Bob Avakian interview and took a copy of We Need and We Demand, A Whole New Way to Live a Fundamentally Different System. So if you haven't seen these interviews for yourself, check out this teaser.
You know, I stay in my own lane. You know, you think if there's a nuclear war, it won't touch your lane? I mean, come on, let's get f***ing serious around here. You know, you think if U.S. and China go to war, your lane is going to be somehow, I'm just going along in my lane. I mean, people need to wake up and get serious. This is a contest between oppressors, the world's leading oppressors, with the U.S. number one. Yes, USA number one oppressor and plunderer in the entire world for decades.
Today we are announcing, with the future at stake, we need a fundamentally different system, a whole new way to live, a special screening of a selection from the Bob Avakian interviews on the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, Tuesday, October 17th. This is going to be followed by a discussion with the co-hosts of the RNL show who interviewed Bob Avakian, Sotsara Taylor, and myself, Andy Z. And our discussion is going to be moderated by David Zeiger, the filmmaker who made the film Sir, No Sir. This will be at the Hudson Theaters in Hollywood, California. This showing and the panel discussion afterwards is aimed at being the first of a movement of people watching and engaging these interviews on a mass scale. Yes, online, but also being together in a room where you see it with other people and then are able to discuss and share that experience. There really is nothing else like this. Bob Avakian is speaking about the biggest questions that confront humanity. Watch them and watch them again. Get into these interviews and you will see the world differently. I can tell you that after watching some or all of these interviews, when we ask people what they thought, very often they speak about how they need to change their lives. These interviews are deep, they're funny, they're challenging, and they lift people right out of the muck and mire of today and the horror of today and the danger of today and into who and what they and all of humanity could be. Listen to what Sochi had to say after she watched the BA interviews last year.
If you could meet a great revolutionary thinker and leader, if you could go up close and personal with them, finding out what they think about key issues in the world, how they see making revolution, how they look at the most controversial issues in society, and how they came to be the way they are. If you could go one-on-one with them and hear what they thought about humanity, about friendship, about poetry, about everything that makes life worth living, would you? Well, now you can. A new 3-part interview, up close and personal, with Bob Avakian, heart and soul and hardcore for revolution. In a very real way, you'll get to meet this leader, Bob Avakian, BA. And as the title says, you'll get a sense, more than a sense, of the heart and soul, the core of this leader. And you'll get a deep sense of what it means to be hardcore for revolution. These interviews are real as hell. It's scientific. And you'll come out the other end with a sense of how we could, together in our hundreds and thousands and ultimately millions, go to work to wrench hope out of what every day seems to be a more hopeless situation through revolution.
Earlier in today's program, I spoke of a soon-to-be-published statement on RevCom.us that provides concrete guidance for how the RevComs and the movement for revolution can get from where we are at today with the revolutionary forces very small and the masses of people locked within thinking there's no way forward as the situation sharpens by the week. This statement that gets into how we prepare now to be able to seize the time when it could be possible to win millions to the revolution. But for this to happen, in which seemingly overnight millions are moved, must be urgently worked and struggled for now. This guide to building up the forces for revolution says, quote, "We are spreading far and wide the inspiring vision of how much better life could be for the great majority of people if millions of people got behind this revolution and carried it through," end quote. And then, as one very key point in this strategic statement states, "We are doing this in an all-around way, and especially in broadly promoting what are truly extraordinary interviews with Bob Avakian on the RNL show. We are doing the necessary work and waging the necessary struggle so that masses of people know about and get with the leadership we have in Bob Avakian. learning about the inspiring vision and concrete blueprint for a radically different emancipating society he has brought forward, following the concrete guidance he is providing, and taking up and applying the scientific method and approach of the new communism he has developed in order to really make revolution and finally get free. Babavaking is completely different than the endless stream of bourgeois capitalist leaders who are put forward and others who cannot see or will not look beyond the confines of this horrific system. He is hardcore for revolution, with a largeness of mind, generosity of spirit, and a lively sense of humor, all of which shines through in these interviews. Over the next few weeks, we will be digging into these interviews here on the RNL Show, and the Revolution Clubs will be getting people together to make the Babavakian interviews on our show a big deal as part of their preparations for Revolution Now. And tomorrow, on the 30th of September, I'm going to be speaking at the Revolution Club meeting here in Los Angeles. And you should check your local Revolution Club or Revolution Books for plans they have for the Babavakian interviews. So right now, I want to go to the third interview with Babavakian that's on our website, revcom.us. And the first question is one in which Sansara asked Babavakian, why is state power a good thing?
You have made the bold statement that it is right to want state power, that state power in the hands of the right people and the right class is a great thing. And to wildly understate it, this is not how most people think about state power. Why is state power a great thing?
Well, you have to begin with what you referred to, you know, in the hands of the right class of people, the right kind of state power based on the right kind of system. One reason why a lot of people may not think state power is so great is because they're living under the exercise of it by these monstrous oppressors. So the idea, the idea is promoted, you know, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and all this from some British lord, you know. So, you know, people are, you know, inclined to look at the way things are now and how power is exercised and have a hard time imagining it could be exercised in a different way by different people. And so the reason I say state power is a great thing is because in order to do all the things that we need to do to uproot all this oppression, you have to have power in society in order to do them. I mean, the reason we can't do them now is because the wrong people, that is a class of exploiters, the capitalist imperialists, have state power and use that state power to suppress any attempt at seriously uprooting all this oppression. So we need a different kind of state power, a socialist state power that, first of all, is radically different in terms of what it's based on, what it's aiming for, and also whom it involves in the exercise of state power. It's involving the masses of people increasingly in playing an initiating role and a conscious role in transforming society. And unlike the present system, socialist state power backs up the masses of people in moving to uproot all this oppression, while it also provides leadership to them to see what they're up against, what are the contradictions they have to break through on in order to uproot all this, and how to wage that struggle. So it's a completely different kind of state power. Just think about it. Any idea that you were going to overthrow the existing system and then you're not going to have any state power, guess what happens? You are going to have state power. It's going to be the state power you just overthrew will be back in power in a quick minute. So the whole idea that you can do without a state, without state power, yes, you need a radically different kind of state power, but you need power to be able to lead masses of people and back them up in making all these transformations. What happens now when people go out? First of all, the state power, I'll just back up a second, will be radically different. You're not going to have a police force that murders people on a daily basis in order to maintain a system of oppression. The police forces, we will need police forces, we will need armed forces to defend the revolution. But these forces will be radically different. They will be the masses of people who have risen up to make the revolution in the first place. That's from whom the police and the armed forces will be drawn. And I've made the statement before. Some people say, whoa, wait a minute. You're going to take all these people out here running around right now shooting each other and selling drugs, and you're going to give them state power? I don't think so. I don't think I want to be part of that. No, we're not talking about people as they are now. We're talking about people, go back with the question that Andy raised previously in a previous talk, previous interview we were doing, people as they've been radically transformed, as they've radically transformed themselves on the basis of being struggled with in the course of transforming the world and making revolution. So then, the state power is going to be in the hands of masses of people who've been struggled with to be emancipators of humanity and to make a revolution on that basis. And, there's a lot of experience in the history of revolution and particularly communist revolution that we can draw from, that it is possible to transform people. Like when they made the revolution in China, for example, which took a different path, just to be clear, for anybody out there, just to be clear, was a revolution that in those particular circumstances was made by waging armed struggle from the very, very beginning. Armed struggle from the beginning and throughout. That was the character of the Chinese Revolution because of the particular character of Chinese society and the conditions that they were dealing with. Our revolution is different. It's a period of carrying out the three prepares through political and ideological work and, standing up and defending the people and fighting the power, but not attempting to wage an armed struggle until the conditions for that have been brought into being. That's where the three prepares come in. That's what we're working toward, but that's not what we're doing now. But there's still something to learn from the Chinese Revolution. When Mao started up the People's War in China, the armed struggle against the existing oppressive government and the imperialists who were behind it, the U.S. and Britain in particular, he said, I went to the brave elements, what we might call the brothers and sisters on the street, in our circumstances. He said, I went to them because they weren't afraid to die. But then a tremendous amount of struggle had to be waged. What's this about? What's this armed struggle for? This is not armed struggle to go out and rip off people. They had to have points of attention, to make sure that the people were adhering to the principles of the revolution and applying the principles of the revolution. Things like you don't take a needle or a thread from the masses of people. You don't go about, this is mainly a male army at that time, although the masses of women did become involved. You don't go abusing women. There are different principles here that have to do with the revolution that we're carrying out. And there's struggle, and that's why they had to have those points of discipline and points of attention. So we're talking about masses of people who've been transformed through struggle and transforming themselves in order to bring about the revolution we're talking about and bring into being the necessary state power. But that state power, once established, will be completely different, radically different. The role of state power and whether it really serves the revolution to emancipate the masses of people or whether it actually constitutes another oppressive force over the masses of people is determined by the content of that state power, by the line, the politics and ideology and program that it's based on and that is leading it. That's how you know, and that's how the masses of people can be led to evaluate what's the character of the state power. Is this state power that's standing above the mass of people and turning into an oppressive force that's going to actually restore the old system of exploitation and oppression? Or is this a state power by its content, by its actions, by the way it's being led, by what it's fighting for, by what's guiding it, is actually backing up and supporting the masses of people in emancipating themselves and supporting the revolution throughout the world toward the same goal of emancipation, uprooting and eliminating all antagonistic conflicts among people, all forms of oppression and exploitation. But that's why state power, yes, I want us to have state power, not the three of us sitting here, but the masses of people who've risen up to make a revolution so that they can carry through what they fought for in that revolution. And yes, so that they can actually back up the masses of people in carrying out those transformations and prevent anyone from actually overthrowing the system that exists and re-enslaving the masses of people. So, this is why state power, socialist state power, is a great thing to have. And it's something we should, everyone who wants to see a more just world should be hungering for this state power, not, you know, worrying about what it'll be like. Yeah, there needs to be a struggle over what it's going to be like, you know, and that will be an ongoing struggle. But we should be primarily hungering for that state power, because that's the power that will enable these transformations I'm talking about. Now, to be clear, since I said it will prevent people from overthrowing the socialist system, that doesn't mean that there won't be allowance for dissent. Doesn't mean that we don't need a lot of intellectual and cultural ferment. We do. That's all embodied in the Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America. You know, anyone who raises objections to what the government is doing or what the policies are, or even to the very existence of a socialist state, will be allowed to do so. And there will even be ways that criticism is encouraged and fostered, and dissent, because you need that. You need to know what your shortcomings are. And the masses of people need to thrash out what's right and wrong, what will really lead to on the road of emancipation, and what, you know, even though it might say it's doing that, is actually leading back to the old way. So, you know, there'll be a flourishing and even a promotion of dissent. By that I mean even in the, you know, in the arts and the media and so on, provision made for people to have a vehicle to criticize and raise dissent, even while, you know, they, people who try to violently overthrow the new socialist system will be prevented from doing so. Oh, well, you're just like the people in power now. You know, that's what they say. You can dissent as long as you don't try to seriously challenge them. Well, no, we're not just like them. You know, for one thing, they don't encourage and promote dissent. They limit dissent within a very narrow sphere. But second of all, once again, we're back to what's the nature, what's the character of that state power? And the reason we're not like them is because what the state power is for, what it concretely does, what it supports the masses of people in doing, what philosophy or ideology, what program, what politics, what social relations, it's all embodying and promoting, which are the complete and direct opposite of what exists under this system. So no, we're not just like them at all. We're radically different.
That was the first answer of the third of the three Bob Avakian interviews. This third interview is truly incredible. It's pathbreaking in its conception of what we are fighting for. It solves world historic problems of moving to an emancipating world. This is seamless in how it runs deep with the morality we need in an urgent and heartfelt and at the same time sharp struggle with the youth who catch the hardest hell under this system to see that their future lies in this revolution. And it ends with a deep reflection from Bob Avakian on what sustains him with meaning for us all.
This is the Michael Slate Show. I'm Sansara Taylor, and we've been listening to a wide-ranging commentary by Andy Z from the Revolution Nothing Less Show. Next, we'll hear from Raymond Latta, speaking at Revolution Books in New York City, on his talk, The Communist Revolution We Need versus the Anti-Communist Brainwash You Are Getting.
Now, this past May, the New York Times featured a typical high-profile attack on the Cultural Revolution by the liberal anti-communist columnist Pamela Paul. She repeats standard-issue lies that intellectuals were tortured and that the horrors of Maoism resulted in 1.6 million to 2 million deaths, with no substantiation or analysis. The Cultural Revolution was, in her words, quote, a political trauma in which, quote, comrade turned on comrade, friend upon friend, husband upon wife, and child upon parent, end quote. It is the anti-communist trope that revolutions eat their children. So let's pull the lens back to get at the truth. In 1949, the Chinese Revolution led by Mao triumphed. It had mobilized tens and hundreds of millions of peasants, workers, and broader sections of society in heroic struggle to put an end to the savageries of imperialist domination and landlord rule. But the seizure of power in 1949 was, as Mao emphasized, not the end point, but the beginning of a complex process and struggle of transforming society and thinking. Mao was leading people on the socialist road. Hundreds of millions were taking up the cause of forging a society free from exploitation and oppression. But a new capitalist class had arisen within the structures of the Communist Party and the new socialist state. And they were organizing to take China down the capitalist road. The roots of this new bourgeois class under socialism lay in the continuing economic and social inequalities of socialist society. It lay in the continuing use of money and price in the economy, in the continuing influence of traditional ideas, values, and culture. Mao made the unprecedented analysis of the danger of capitalist restoration under socialism and how to combat this in ways that mobilized and raised the consciousness of the masses. In 1966, Mao launched the Cultural Revolution, which was a kind of revolution within the revolution. He called on the masses of people to rise up to overthrow these new bourgeois forces and prevent the restoration of capitalism, and to carry the revolution forward towards a communist world. The monumental struggle and the incredible transformations that took place in the decade 1966-76 were a source of inspiration and direction for oppressed humanity and all who sought total emancipation in a new world. The women's liberation movement around the world, many of the most radical elements within it were studying and listening to what was happening in China during the Cultural Revolution. The Black Panther Party popularized the Red Book. I, as a student, was radicalized by the Cultural Revolution and what it represented, the idea of a total revolution. As for the methods of the Cultural Revolution, no, it was not vengeful violence of people willy-nilly turning on each other, as Pamela Paul in her New York Times article argues. You can read the documents issued by the Maoist leadership. You can read real accounts of the struggle in books that are available here at Revolution Books. The main forms of struggle during the Cultural Revolution were, one, mass debate over policy and the direction of society. Two, mass political mobilization, demonstrations, strikes, political uprisings that led to new and more participatory forms of political power, and mass criticism in public gatherings and assemblies of officials and administrators who were losing touch with the masses and pushing programs that would take China down the capitalist road. Acts of violence and killings did take place during the Cultural Revolution. But here is what the evidence shows. Violent conflict was not the main trend of the Cultural Revolution. And it was not the orientation of Mao. But when things went in a violent direction, Mao and the revolutionary forces condemned and criticized this through statements, directives, editorials, and on-the-ground interventions. And in fact, much of the violence that occurred was actually instigated by the new capitalist forces, especially for the purpose of discrediting Mao. No, the Cultural Revolution was not, as Pamela Paul says in her New York Times article, political trauma. It was political liberation. Society was sprung in the air. New systems of factory management, of political governance, enabled workers and peasants to take greater responsibility for the direction of society. Open door research, what was called open door research, brought scientists to the countryside to conduct experiments alongside peasants and to share their lives. The Cultural Revolution brought forth the most egalitarian, needs-based healthcare system in the world at the time. A new revolutionary culture was being created with ballets and operas that synthesized Western and non-Western dance and musical techniques and styles. A culture that told of the struggle for a new world of women awakened to liberation. The ethos of serve the people was spread and taken up throughout society. Were intellectuals persecuted, punished, and killed off as a category? No. This is tales from the crypt nonsense. But there were shortcomings and problems in the larger approach of the Cultural Revolution. In attempting to narrow the great divide between mental and manual labor, in promoting new revolutionary art and cultural activity by peasants and workers, too many constraints were placed on professional artistic and intellectual work and experiment. There was not, during the Cultural Revolution, the understanding of the great importance of dissent, including dissent from anti-socialist perspectives in socialist society, in a socialist society that is moving towards communism. Oppositional dissent can reveal problems and shortcomings in socialist society. The Constitution for the new Socialist Republic in North America emphasizes the vital and indispensable role of dissent and intellectual and cultural ferment and the unfettered search for the truth in socialist society, how this must be fostered on an unprecedented scale as part of the very fabric of socialist society in which critical thinking flowers. Put differently, if we're going to change the world profoundly, we need to understand it deeply. Here we must step back again. In October 1976, the capitalist rotors in China staged a reactionary coup and began the process of restoring capitalism. This marked the end of the first stage of communist revolution.
That was Raymond Lada giving his speech, The New Communist Revolution We Need Versus the Anti-Communist Brainwash You Are Getting. He was speaking in New York City. It's just an excerpt of his speech. You can find the whole thing at revolutionbooksnyc.org if you want to hear the full speech. And finally, for the end of our show today, we're going to hear from Rafael Cadaris and myself, Sansara Taylor, on woke lunacy versus real revolution.
In addition to the anti-communist brainwash keeping people locked within this capitalist system, another major obstacle to the revolution we need, especially among students and intellectuals, is woke identity politics. As I put it in my recent speech at Revolution Books in New York, a narcissistic obsession with self and identity, a focus on changing words rather than changing the world, and hiding from reality with safe spaces and trigger warnings. A cannibalistic cancel culture backed up by identity politics police dictating who has a right to speak and make art. And if you haven't experienced something directly, you should just shut up and stay in your lane, check your privilege. All aimed at getting a seat at the table in this blood-soaked American empire. Bob Avakian has deeply analyzed the harm of wokeness and cancel culture. And after today's segment, get into his work on this question at revcom.us. Basing ourselves on this work, Sansara Taylor and I are on a national speaking tour to demolish the whole framework of woke identity politics, to lift people's sights and win growing numbers to revolution and the new communism developed by BA. Some liberal and progressive people are beginning to recognize how extreme and damaging wokeness has become, but very few are challenging the anti-scientific philosophy at the root of it. So let's watch the very beginning of Sansara Taylor's speech at UCLA last spring on woke lunacy versus real revolution, where she directly addresses this.
Objective reality is not part of the unnamed logic of whiteness, as is absurdly claimed by Robin DiAngelo, the author of the best-selling White Fragility. Objective reality is also not a part of white supremacist culture, as is argued in a widely circulated tract by Tima Okun. And reason and rationality are not masculinist approaches to knowledge building, as is argued by way too many feminist and black feminist theorists. All of these identity politics-based denials of objective reality and the countless others that could be cited are complete garbage. They are bonkers. They blind you to what is really going on in this world. They blind you to the source of the problems and to this possibility of radical change. They blind you to the fact that a whole different, better world is possible. And whatever the intents of these particular authors and the many more who could be cited, the anti-scientific methodologies that they promote keep you away from figuring out the source of the problems that humanity faces and how we could actually get free. They talk about inclusion, representation, and equity within this system, but they blind you to how we could get rid of this system through an actual revolution and get emancipated. Emancipated from white supremacy, emancipated from patriarchy, emancipated from the American chauvinism that is killing this planet and that is bringing us closer every day to the threat of nuclear war. And emancipated from the capitalist imperialist system that requires these hateful relations among the people. They talk about harm and trauma and mental health days, but they never talk about, and still less do they do anything about, the Christian fascist, theocratic, white supremacist movement that is moving aggressively to lock in an even more nightmarish version of America. I am going to get into all of that, and I am going to get into how the increasingly unhinged movements to tear down anyone and anything that does not conform to the constantly mutating standards of wokeness is not only useless against this system and the rising fascism, but is actually serving to fuel it.
You can watch her whole speech and the very exciting Q&A that followed here on this channel. That event at UCLA, which 125 students, professors, and others came to, created a very positive controversy on campus and showed the potential to bust open this debate in a major way. This fall, we have some speaking events being planned at universities in North Carolina and Northern California, but we need much, much more. We need a bigger team working on this. We need outreach to students and professors. We need a grassroots movement of people spreading Bob Avakian's work on this question and the sharp statement, woke is a destructive force. And we definitely need donations and fundraising efforts to make all this happen. So reach out to us to bring this tour to your campus and to get involved in this campaign. Here, we're going to show you a portion of the Q&A from the event I did at Revolution Books in New York, where I addressed a number of questions on the floor, including controversies about whether white artists should be allowed to depict subject matter that's not their own direct experience. In speaking to this, I pulled the lens back on why this woke lunacy versus real revolution campaign is so critical in this moment.
I want to say, look, there's to what you were raising, there's no question that, you know, people who've been locked out of being able to have access to the world of literature and art and sculpture, whatever sphere it is, people who have been locked out, you know, or the nonprofit world, that should be changed. Like, people should be, we have to actually go out there, we have to oppose every form of discrimination. But that's very different from the quote I said at the end of my speech about, I'm not going to read dead white males anymore, or I'm not going to, you know, have, or the cancellation of books like the one Raymond was talking about, a good book that's building empathy for our immigrant brothers and sisters who have to go on this perilous journey. Canceling a book like that so that you can, like, because you think the book deal should have been for you? This is, like, extremely harmful. And it is, honestly, it is just a reflection of this dog-eat-dog capitalist mentality. And you're using your identity as leverage to get more for you. And it's all within a very narrow sphere and the masses of people. And this is where I wanted to come back to what you were raising, man, about when is this situation, you know, when are people going to actually wake up? I forgot exactly how you put it. When's the dam going to break?
Yeah, basically.
You know, it's we have to pull people out of that dog-eat-dog rat race, you know, and get people to look at the big picture. What is happening in the world that we're facing right now? The hottest month in 120,000 years. Actually, I don't know if people know this, but, you know, I think it was the Paris Climate Agreement said the threshold for catastrophic climate consequences is basically 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. And in July, it actually went up to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. I think it's probably going to go back down to 1.2 degrees Celsius, but then it's going to keep climbing. You know, this is the state of the – we are actually in unprecedented times. You know, Biden even said that the danger of nuclear Armageddon, his words, is greater than it's been since the Cuban Missile Crisis, when John F. Kennedy said the danger of nuclear war was – nearly 50%. Think about that. People have no f***ing idea what nuclear war means. They dropped, we're just past the anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki when the U.S. wiped out two whole cities. But these days with Russia, the United States, China, the amount of nuclear weapons they have, they could destroy the entire planet.
80 times more powerful.
They could destroy the entire planet. This is, and Biden is saying we're closer to that possibility than we've been during the Cuban. I mean, people need to wake the f*** up about what is happening and stop scrambling and scuffling for a little tiny little piece of the pie. You know, that's the, and, you know, we could talk about the indictment of Donald Trump, which is very much, you know, people shouldn't just sit here and cheer about that indictment. This is going to escalate the clash within society. And these fascists are talking about, you know, what's her name? Carrie Lake, that fascist from Arizona, wherever she's from. She said, if they want to get to Trump, they're going to have to go through 75 million Americans. And we believe in our Second Amendment right, you know?
So, the NRA.
Yeah, the NRA, you know? So, we need to wake people up to the reality. But the other aspect of that, just in terms of your question of when's the dam going to break, all this is shaking people. You know, it's forcing people to question fundamental things about this society. And it's even more so as the reality of this situation continues and escalates and further intrudes into people's daily lives. It's not making people revolutionary spontaneously. It's actually causing a lot of people to get even more depressed. Suicide rates are at all-time highs. to get even people, you know, a lot of people are getting even more oblivious, turning away from reality, just indulging in self. But people, the norms, the way the norms that people have been conditioned to accept about the society are being battered. You know, peaceful transfer of power from Republicans to Democrats, Democrats to Republicans. This has been going on for hundreds of years. You know, this is all being undermined by Trump and these fascists who think they're the only legitimate political force, you know, relying on the legal system to deal with grievances. You know, that's now the whole legal system is dominated by a fascist majority on the Supreme Court. You know, all this is the basis right now to win people over to revolution. It doesn't mean it's going to – this is exactly why we have to go and frontally challenge people. We have to bring people real revolution. We have to put it on the map. We're on a campaign right now. I just came from Los Angeles where we just had a whole weekend of plastering the city with posters, you know, about revolution. We're bringing people this Bob Avakian interview because there is no revolution without leadership. And this is not just any leader, but this is someone who's got a whole new framework for emancipation, you know, and you really get that in a living way in that interview. You know, we're connecting people with the Revolution Nothing Less show in this website because people, as these events unfold, people need analysis. They need analysis every day, analysis every week. What's happening? Why is it happening? Where are the interests of humanity? So we need to plug people into all this, growing numbers of people. And this is the challenge for everyone here. You know, we are headed somewhere very terrible. But the same conditions that are leading things to such a terrible place are also the same conditions that could lead people to come into this revolution, but only if we fight for it, only if we bring revolution, and only if we take on these obstacles in the thinking of people, especially this woke lunacy. And the reason being because it's exactly among the people who care. You know, it's among the people who want to do something. It's not just the oblivious individualists who don't give a fuck about anyone themselves. It's the people who care and want to do something. And then they get brought into this cannibalistic fucking shit where they're targeting each other and don't even have a right to speak or do anything.
All right, my friends, that was Rafael Cadaris and myself, Sansara Taylor, speaking on woke lunacy versus real revolution. And this brings us to the end of today's Michael Slate Show. I have really enjoyed spending the hour with you. I want to thank you for taking the time with me here today. I want to thank Henry Carson for assistant producing. I want to send love and affection and great appreciation to Michael Slate, as we do every week here on the Michael Slate Show. And I want to remind you as I close out that the problem is not human nature. It is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. I'll talk to you next week.
Cats like me and you have got love.